It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Mr. Traveler, you've been away and back again.
And away and back, and away and back. Well, we had the fun trips there, and I went to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And
woo! Cheeseheads!
Watched the Packers play a game, and I know I'll tick
was
off
it cold?
I kind of did
was
a...
Was it cold?
It was cold. Not cold by Green Bay standards, cold by Southern California standards. We weren't dressed right. I just got to tell you, we don't have the clothes you need.
Polar bear skin.
We don't have the clothes you... We watched other people dressed around us going, yeah, I wish we would
have. I lived there
that.
For a long time. I'm not sure I ever dressed right.
Oh, man. It was only 23 when we left the hotel, but it got to 35 for the game. That sounded not too bad, but sitting in a cold stadium with a lot of cement around you, it's a little on the chilly side.
What I really get impressed with is those guys that somehow take off their shirts, paint themselves, you know, green and yellow, and you're just going like, dude, it's Wisconsin.
Yeah, I did that. Didn't make it on TV. I don't know why.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a bummer.
Oh, no, all dressed up and nowhere to go.
No, undressed.
All painted up.
No,
no. Oh, gosh.
Believe me, I don't understand those people either.
I really wanted a picture of that.
You know what I learned, though? I think it ruins sport for me.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You
finally
should you keep the Pantheon. No, should you keep this to yourself?
I don't know.
Is this a red pill moment?
It would be.
Okay.
I mean, it's what I have to close my eyes to now on Sunday if I watch the games. Yeah, I mean, we had dinner.
What happened?
Well, the people that helped us get tickets and offered us tickets to go, and one of them had an aunt, I think an aunt, great aunt, that wanted to have dinner with us on Saturday night, so we went out to dinner with her, and she was the wife of one of Vince Lombardi's coaches back in the glory days of the Lombardi Packers.
Okay.
And she just told us too many stories, man, just way too many stories of what it takes to win a championship and how much you've got to just throw family life to the wind and not care about your kids at all to make it work, and how much coaches who win demand that of players. And just, I'm sitting there going, really? So if you've got to win big, you've got to really sell your families down the river. And just hearing her story and knowing, you know, you read the stories.
You just mean time away, time.
Yeah. Even Vince Lombardi saying to one guy, look, if you're going to care about your family, you can't coach football for me.
Oh.
Yeah, he wanted to.
That didn't make it to any of those greatest quotes.
No, it doesn't make it in the sports magazines, you know. And I think, gosh, how much, because you're reading enough hints about coaches that work 20-hour days, kind of like you, and you're not even coaching.
Oh.
But, yeah, kind of like
yeah.
But they work 20-hour days during the season, and their families kind of take it on the chin. And, you know, the Steve Jobs, I'm reading his book, the book about him.
He wasn't so great to work for.
Well, not so great to work for. The reason he had this Walter Isaacson do his biography, which is incredibly well written, by the way, and gives you great insight into how business works in America, and it really, that's disillusioning as well. But the reason he wanted him to write the book is so that his kids would know him, because otherwise his kids wouldn't know him. He'd not been with them enough. And so not only was a pain in the butt to work for, he was not the dad you'd want to have. And then you look at, boy, what does success cost at the levels people celebrate it in terms of the destruction of families, business relationships, all the stuff that, all the collateral damage of what we celebrate as success. So I'm coming away from that.
Does it make the highlight reel?
It doesn't.
It doesn't make the highlight reel. It's not the angle that they report on.
It's not even in our consciousness when we look and we say, "Yeah, yeah, they win the World Super Bowl championship and all that stuff." You're going, "Okay, destroyed 15 families on the way to this, or 50 families." But you know, we all get something to celebrate about, and they get a lifetime stake in immortality, which is kind of a oxymoron—a lifetime stake in immortality. But that's what it amounts to, and. You know, so I was watching some games since, I'm kind of going, gee, at what cost is this going on? I don't know that, but I'm more aware of it. So,
did you hand back your cheese head?
You know, I've never had a cheese, well, actually somebody gave me a cheese head. I hate the cheese head. To me, that's the Wisconsin wing.
Wait a minute.
That's the Wisconsin wing of the Packer family. And they're welcome to it.
Oh, is but there another wing?
It's dorky. Yeah. It's,
wait a minute.
It's the dorky.
Wait, no, wait a minute.
No, it's dorky.
The Wisconsin wing. It's yeah. not a wing. It's
it
a
is
whole
a wing.
Bird.
Well, it's a whole bird. No, it's
a whole flipping bird. Wisconsin.
No,
the Packers are there.
They are, and that's where that wing lives. But if you're not a Wisconsin guy, wearing cheese on your head just sounds stupid. I don't wear cheese on my head. I had one guy give me cheese. I said, don't do it. I'm going to throw it away.
They're from California.
I'll wear the jerseys. I'll wear the sweatshirts. That cheesehead really... What does cheese have to do with football?
It has
really.
Everything to do with Wisconsin.
It does. God bless them, the Wisconsin wing of the Packer Party.
Look,
but
I paid my dues. You have no idea what I sacrificed to live there.
I understand the sacrifice they make, but when it's that cold, I think you want something other than cheese on your head. I'm just
no, thinking. That's what happens.
What happens?
It's that cold, you don't know the difference. And if it's warm, you put it on your head.
So you're saying the cheesehead thing is people who've lost their minds.
I think this is my point. I think they have come out of the bar, and all they had left was, just put cheese on your head.
Again, this is the Wisconsin wing of the Packer Party. Of the Packer
right.
Party.
It would
absolutely.
Be the whole wing.
It's not the whole wing.
Yes,
you know how many Packer fans exist all over the world? And not even fans, owners. Owners. No, I refuse the cheesehead part of that whole
all right,
escapade.
You with one public share in a... See, you're
and
part
I also
of the deal.
Want,
you're one of the owners.
And I
you're one of the owners. You need to stop this. You have a responsibility.
Here's my owner edict right here. Here it is. I don't want any world championship that costs the love of a parent with their child within the organization.
You're fired.
I don't. You can't fire me. I'm an owner. You can't be fired, dude. Anyway.
Well, I'm sorry for that. That's been another red pill moment.
That was a wild
by the GodJourney.com.
There we go.
Red pill moments. That's what we should call it.
There's a name for
a
podcast.
Red pill moment.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And then I went to Louisiana and...
That's Cajun food.
And Texas. East Texas. East Texas. Down in Jasper. Very.
Okay, you're going southern. Careful now.
I'm. They're my friends.
Okay.
But Louisiana is everything you're afraid it is. As I understand,
keep those cards and letters coming. Wayne@livestream.org.
As I was saying,
you're saying
they were telling me I was 2 miles from the home of the Grand Wizard of the KKK. I'm like,
how'd that go?
I didn't see him. So
you bring your sheet.
Yeah, I mean, we were with some wonderful people, but. They eat squirrel. they're going to try and find me some squirrel.
Them is good eating it.
That's what I hear.
That means you got to shoot more than one.
I was going to taste it if they brought it over. I can say that now. I was
you
at
least
going to
frog legs.
Nah, frog legs have no interest to me. But squirrel has no interest to me either. But to come back and tell you I ate squirrel, that would have been worth it. And by eating, let me be clear what I meant by eating squirrel. A little piece.
Yeah.
On a fork.
That's like my daughter eating vegetables.
Mostly,
right?
Mostly tasted by sniffing it. But
needs a microscope.
But nonetheless, it would have been worth talking about. So anyway... Met some wonderful people, some people brand new to this whole journey, and people have been listening for 7, 8, 10 years to, well, 7 years, I guess, to us, but have listened to other things at Livestream. Had a wonderful 3 days just kind of conversing through all that with 14 cats in the backyard. 14 cats in the backyard.
I didn't know we had a pet wing of the God Journey.
Well, there are Chipper fans. There are Chipper fans out there who still, yeah, man, they are all for the cats.
Be careful. You've got to honor the dead.
I opened my window in the morning. There's 14 cats outside the window of the bedroom I was sleeping in.
And you're deathly allergic.
Plus, there were horses on the property.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
How did you manage that one?
Somehow, Grace.
Is really is us?
Grace and a little inhaler, and I got through it. And then the gal who invited me there to be with that bunch drove me partway to Jasper, Texas in a car that had just married on the back window. Hilarious.
Oh, very fun.
We borrowed a car from a couple that had just been
there
married.
You go.
And so
the cans still tied on?
No cans. We didn't get too much flat going, but she said she got a lot of flat driving back alone in a car that said just married.
Yeah, that would be interesting there.
And then I got in Jasper with some dear old brothers and sisters, some guys that have been on this journey fairly new to this step of the journey, who've been kind of pastor types and evangelist types in their vocational life.
Wow.
And yeah, a lot of aha moments, a lot of little zinger lines like, what did you just say? Can you back
for you?
Up? Yeah, just
okay.
Eyes being open. No, for them.
For them. Stuff. You were doing the zingers.
I wasn't intending to. I was just talking. But yeah, people, whoa, back that up. I want to hear that again. And yeah, it's wonderful, folks.
Dial us in. What were some of the eurekas?
Boy, it was so, I don't know, like pulling out of my hat. I remember
pulling
one from
out of
the
your cheese head.
Again, don't have to. I don't know how to make this any clearer to you. And if you send me a cheese head, I will throw it away. No, I just don't want people going, I'm going to send him a cheese head.
And
I'll get 4,500 cheese heads.
That would be awesome.
No, it would not be.
That would be good. FedEx and cheese heads.
It's good for packing books in, though. We'd be cutting them up and packing books in foam cheese for a long time to come. Yeah. So that was all fun. We did talk some of the stuff about the kingdom of God, what really is the kingdom, and one guy was saying, I've been preaching for 40 years, and God just kind of been saying to me the last few weeks, I don't have a clue what the kingdom of God is. And so I made a statement about this. I've used this illustration a lot, but the definition of the kingdom that an atheist gave me on an airplane flight.
An atheist?
An atheist, yeah. You haven't heard the story. Come on. I've told you.
I may have, but refresh me.
Well, I'm sure anybody who listens to most of my stuff will have heard the story, but it was a man on a plane who told me he was an atheist who hates Christians. And when he asked what I did for a living, I told him, well, I kind of wander around the planet helping people what Jesus really sort out, what Jesus really said. He goes, oh, you do you? Well, you know what I think Jesus really said? And I said, no. And here's a self-professed atheist who hates Christians going to tell me what Jesus really taught.
Good.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I want this to begin. And he says, I think Jesus taught us we have a Father who loves us more than we know. And if we could come to, if we could sort that out, we would know how to treat each other.
That's very good.
I've never heard it put better. That's the essence of John 13. Love one another as I have loved you. That gets to the heart of it. And the whole world's going to know. And I asked him, I said, well, my jaw just dropped. And I said, and you don't believe that? Why? He said, I've never seen it lived.
Bummer.
So we had an interesting 2-hour conversation after that. And this was probably 12, 13 years ago. VP of a big electronics firm. I was in first class that day on it.
There you go.
Passed up upgrade, so that was kind of wild and fun.
I think when we focus on church and the minutia, I do think we lose a little bit of focus.
We do.
It wasn't the gospel of the church. As much as I like church, if we understand her to be the bride.
Yeah.
If we understood the church as the bride, I think we'd get a lot more of the love romance focus.
Probably. It's not like one of the modern brides.
No, not like brides from Beverly Hills and stuff like
that. No. I just meant the thing about the bride now. I think we've ruined weddings, to be honest. Little girls 4 and 5 years old are planning for the day they get married and choosing wedding dresses. And it's all about the bride. It really is wedding. And I think
we're sitting as a couple of grooms.
I had a dream one time about Jesus, like the groom, standing at the altar looking at his watch and kind of like, what's going on? And the bride was in the dressing room, primping hair, primping makeup.
Yeah.
And I do think, unfortunately, today the bride's focus is on the bride. But if the bride's focus is on the groom,
right?
And we're like that today. I think we talk about church, not you and me, but the whole, I just read the recent issue of Christianity Today magazine, and the whole focus on church this, church that, and just going, man, our focus really is askew. It's not on Jesus, who he is, how he's making himself known in the world. It's all about how we're doing it and should we do it different and how can we do it better. And
yeah, which, you know, I think when you understand it's the gospel of the kingdom, it's hard to not think of the king.
Yeah.
And start there.
Yep.
And it's like, I think when we put the mechanics of how we gather, it's like, you know what? I think there was intentional freedom in the scriptures. It kind of says, well, what are you doing? Well, however best you can do that, why don't you gather that way? As opposed to, no, got to do it this way. And everyone's got to do this. It's kind of like, I think there's quite a bit of freedom there.
You think there is?
I do.
I do too. But we've kind of grown up with there's only one way to really do it right that counts in the whole general sense of Christendom.
Yeah.
At least in its official.
Yeah, which is why I think, you know, we got an email. I don't know that it's needed to sort of read it, but I think I heard someone's plea of just kind of feeling like, gosh, I've been in the system for so long. I'm tired of it. I feel kind of ripped off. I'm a little mad. And I'm out of it now. And it's not happening quite like I had expected, so I'm kind of mad at God. And they're trying to come to grips with the fact that I just think that gosh, we bring so much expectation to stuff that I don't know any of the relationships that I have. That you bring a whole lot of expectation.
That survive.
That are very good anyways.
Yeah, that survive.
It's like, you know, it's like if I was just trying to have a friendship with myself.
Yep.
With a whole bunch of expectation, I don't think I would pull that off very well.
I'm pretty sure we wouldn't. Yep.
And I think it's like, gosh, why? Do we do that because of kind of anxious fear? Are we trying to control that thing when we do that?
Yeah, there's probably a million reasons why. That could be one of them, certainly.
Because I feel like, how do you help people realize, you know what? You can't do this thing with Jesus without Jesus. You can't play his part for him. It's not satisfying if you try.
Other people can't play his part for
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Yeah. No, surrogate saviors, not needed.
Yeah.
And yet, that's the one thing that it seems it's so difficult to simply be available to. We don't seem to have a whole lot of patience. And personally, I don't think God sits there like, well, I'm just waiting until you, you know, are ready to leave. I don't think he's doing that game.
No. Nor is he saying, I'll bless you June 5th, 2013. I'm just waiting. I want to see if you can wait me out.
How bad you really want it.
Yeah,
Will you pray the price?
Yeah, I don't think you're doing that either.
And it's like, gosh, the whole way of thinking tends to be more about my rights, my stuff, what you expect someone else to do, as opposed to, you know what, do you love him? Do you like him? Have you seen something that makes you attracted to this relationship?
And
if you haven't...
Yeah.
I'm not really sure that there's a whole lot of life there. I would kind of say, you know, if you've seen nothing that makes you attracted to this, then why are you working so hard?
Yeah, and if you haven't, maybe that's where you start. God, show me something about yourself.
Yeah.
Show me who you are. Start without. But I think religion has become a consumeristic thing. So we expect if we go and do the right things, then I should be rewarded. So, and that mentality doesn't change just because we leave something. We leave something with still the mentality of, well, now I've done the right thing. I should be rewarded. And the same mentality. And then I think that's what feeds our anger. I feel abused. I feel used by those people. So I'm angry. And now I'm out here doing, quote unquote, the right thing. And God's not.
Yeah.
Where's the goodies? I was expecting goodies.
Somebody paid me back.
I came out here to get goodies. So where are the goodies? And again, you're going to end up a little bit.
Ticked.
More disillusioned, yeah. And more ticked off. And that's why we talk about gratefully disillusioned, because honestly,
it takes a little while to get there.
It does take some time for that whole religious kind of thinking to detox out. And sometimes I don't think God is beyond letting our frustration lead us to where he wants us to be. That's that kind of the end of the rope thing. I'm getting angry. I'm getting frustrated. Good. How's that working for you? And begin to find some resolve for that inside who God is, not when God does the right stuff for me.
It's weird. I got a phone call last night. You know, I got lovingly put on speakerphone in the middle of a marital fight. Okay.
Wow.
So I'm like, wow. Oh, great. Thanks. Am I here to referee? I mean, do I have
you
a
do
whistle?
This now? Can we have people in the middle of a marriage fight call
sure.
you?
Just call me, and I'm sitting there going like,
let me give you Brad's cell phone number so you can reach
really? This is helpful. And I'm going like, you know, just waiting for someone to take a breath between rants. And I just sat there like, hey, guys, really? I need to be on this right now? We're headed towards what? What are we going to accomplish here? Am I supposed to, you know, listen and cry foul and
choose
you know,
a side.
Clipping?
Choose
and,
a side.
Yeah. And it's
like, I'm right, she's wrong,
it's
just
like,
choose
okay,
my side.
So you list 9 things that he did wrong and 4 things that she did wrong, and it's like, you know what? What do you want? Do you want payment for that? Do you get tongue lashings? What's the whole point of this? Unless you stop doing those 9 things wrong, and unless you stop doing those 4 things wrong, unless you start doing something right that says, I love you, why are we even on here? I mean, if we're going to have a fight, let's have a good fight that focuses towards something. And I just sat there going like, gosh, it seems like so much of the time, out of hurt, we want someone to validate our deal. And it's like, do you really want it to work? Do you want to enjoy this, or do you want to be right?
Did they understand that?
I don't think so.
Oh, great.
I tried. I mean, I did the best darn thing I could, but I just sat there going like, gosh, it's not that hard to make relationship work if your focus is on not what do I get, but how do I love this person?
Yeah, once you start keeping score about who's doing what and messing up what and my tit for tat, you done that, I done, yeah.
It's not going to work.
The relationship's being sold down the street. I think that same, you know, we start talking about with God and feeling like I've done this, you should do this, and that takes you not into the territory where God easily makes himself known. Because you're looking in the wrong thing, trying to prove the wrong thing. And yeah, I think you're going to get beat up there by yourself, and the more angry you get, the less that's going to be helpful to you.
Yeah, it's like, do you even want this relationship? Because the more you focus on what's not working, it's not so much as to diagnose. I mean, it's like, you know what? It's not that hard. It's like, do you actually want to be nice to somebody? That's not that hard.
Yeah.
But we've lost our want to at times when it's all about trying to justify and define, and I'm going to prove that you did it wrong. And it's like, okay, great. Let's just go there for a moment. And once we've done that to the nth degree, how do you recover from that?
Isn't part of it is if you understand what you're doing that hurts me, you'll stop doing it? So it's not like I need you to be punished for what happened back there. I need you to understand that what you're doing hurts here. And can we find a way to live without hurting each other at every turn? Isn't that part of it?
I think so, but to some degree, when I look at the dynamics, it's kind of like, you know what? It seems to me that in as much as someone is actively feeling hurt, they're not stopping to kind of look at this and diagnose. It's sort of like, you stop hurting me, I'll stop hurting you. And they're both expecting the other person
to lay down their weapons first.
To go first. Yeah. And no one will. And you're just going like, guys, this requires Jesus to love before I know how to love. I mean, unless I draw from the right source, I don't know how to make a horizontal relationship work. If I'm expecting it to come from you, you might not give me what I want. Or you may not give it the way I want it. And that doesn't mean you're not. It just means, guess what? I'm drawing from the wrong source.
Yeah, whenever your well-being is hinged to the response of another person, you will manipulate them or get destroyed by them. One of the, I mean, yeah, that just keeps coming up. I do think. But at some point you deal with the other extreme of, okay, if I'm always giving up and giving in, laying down, and the other one just keeps using that to bash me.
Yeah, that's not healthy either.
No, that's not.
There's something wrong there.
There's something wrong there, and I guess you have to have a third party come in. And so let's
just don't put them on speakerphone. Jesus.
Let's give that phone number again.
I just said they're going like, really? Really, this is what I get for this evening?
There's some moments you just wish you hadn't picked up the phone, huh?
Just let go, yeah, I'm just going to put you on speakerphone. Oh, really? That's when you almost want a video phone to go like, can I check out the lay of the land first?
See who's winning? Oh, boy. That's rough.
Well, it's, you know, simple axiom. Hurt people, hurt people. And if you're going to stop the cycle, somebody's got to give for into that situation. And it starts with forgiveness.
Yeah, and I think people, we see this in the Middle East, in this whole super politics in the Middle East, is there's been such a tit-for-tat struggle between two cultures that both cultures feel like they're uneven. And the only way they're going to get to peace is if we make it even. I think marriages do the same thing. Man, you've hurt me. When I hurt you enough, then I'm behind now. And until you just sit down and in forgiveness and love, just wipe away the past and talk about more healthy ways to relate going forward, I just don't think that anybody ever wins that whole, I've got to get even before I can apologize. Or before we can forgive.
It just seems to be, I mean, and even like take it with expectations of someone detoxing out of the whole religious structures. Okay, so you got hurt there. Well, I don't know who's going to pay you back for that. You know? And I see a lot of people in reaction going, it's like they're expecting, they have this bill called hurt that they want to land at someone's feet and say, someone reconcile this account for me, okay? And I'm just going like, I do not know that department.
Yeah.
And isn't the joy of all of a sudden finding something fresh and new, couldn't that be a little bit of an exchange of going, as opposed to coming out and saying, well, I've done a bunch of stuff that somebody owes me and I didn't get paid well.
Or even looking at it so stereotypically as my whole time in that thing was a net negative. I think he's talking about being a mixed bag. I mean, I got my hunger for Jesus there. There's lots of things that more traditional congregations did and nourished and fed in my life. The negative parts of it, this has always helped me a little bit. I go back and go, you know what? No one drugged me here. I was a participant because it met insecurities in my life. So I mean, and I don't mean
nobody had a gun to your head.
Yeah, and I don't mean it's all my fault. I'm such. I don't have those kind of pity parties. Those who do, this may be kind of dangerous thinking. But I always find help with that. I'm going, you know what? I should have known better. I didn't need to play a game I was playing. I remember compromising things I felt inside to get along, to go along, to benefit from. So I look back and I'm not bitter at people that took me captive. I'm not bitter at God that didn't show me soon enough, but I wish he would have. I end up going, you know what? It's a mixed bag. There's some good stuff in there. There's some messy stuff in there. I'm looking to live in more good stuff than less bad stuff. So I want to live differently and go on a journey and let God heal what needs to be healed and touch me in the ways he wants to touch me and take me on. That's what I want to do. And that's the freedom to go and do it. Instead of, I need somebody to pay for what happened to me.
I know.
I've never had that. I wouldn't say never. I'm right in the middle of hurt. There's that moment of, yeah, I want you to get yours. I think that's why people really like hell. You're going to get yours someday. Don't call it. You're going to get it so bad that it makes worth my righteousness. I'm really worth it. And when you take that away from people, it really freaks them out.
That's that love of Jesus right there.
You know, deeply love. You get yours.
I love you for the love of Christ. Really? I wish you wouldn't.
That's like that one article the guy wrote, I can forgive you now because I know God's going to whack you later. It's just a little distorted. Yeah. I'm not sure it's real forgiveness, yeah. You know.
Well, okay.
But
I'm going to probably get dinged for this thought, but...
By me?
Sure. Or by people. I don't know.
Let's get that phone number out again.
Sure. Chase phone number. I think the reality, though, just for me, the way I'm seeing it, I think when other people, quote, take us captive, I have a hard time not concluding that some of us didn't kind of go there willingly. I kind of feel like, you know what? How does someone actually take you captive?
Yeah, or at least we were co-conspirators. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I'm involved. Right. I went along.
Yeah.
And I think that the challenge of that is... We don't tend to acknowledge our own culpability in that condition. Yeah. And I agree, it can get to a place where it's just someone doesn't know how to get out. I mean, I'm not in the blame everybody, you know, here. And I'm not like, ooh, you know, four fingers pointing back at you for every one you point at someone. I'm not doing it. I just sort of feel like I don't know how to get freedom till we recognize, one, it is there. It is possible. And I've got to do some choosing. To lay hold of that.
Yeah.
It's not everybody did to me. I did with them.
Yeah, and I keep going along with, if I'm going along with. I remember one time my daughter called me in the middle of college. She'd been asked to be on the leadership of this ministry thing, so she was on this campus ministry kind of thing, and then it turned really sour, and people were attacking her because she was wanting to get away from the whole guilt thing and move it toward more of a grace thing, and they were really into the big, you're going to burn in hell, so that's why you get saved kind of deal. And so instead of honestly just kind of processing that, as most groups don't do, they turned on my daughter, Julie, and started attacking her. Started saying things, gossiping about her, just making up stuff to hurt her.
Why was she the focal point?
Because she was making suggestions to do things differently.
Yeah,
we can talk about that, too.
Upset of the apple cart there.
But then they start attacking her personally, and then she just feels like she needs to quit the ministry, and she goes to the director and says, I feel like I need to quit. And she says, no, you have a year. You committed for a year to be in leadership here. And so Julie calls me, and she says, I've got this commitment. And I'm going, sweetheart, this is what's true. Getting out of a ministry is like breaking up with a boyfriend. It doesn't take two votes. It only takes one. And she, Yeah, you made a commitment under a certain expectation. That expectation is no longer happening. You're not got a constructive part of a leadership team. And the people on it are threatened by you and therefore being destructive to you. Can you walk away from that without their permission? Yes, you can say, listen, I'm sorry, this wasn't what I thought it was, and I feel like I need to step out for my own sanity. And people don't get to say, no, you can't do that. It's like the boyfriend going, you can't break up with me. What do you mean I can't? It's a unilateral act. It's not a multilateral or a bilateral act. Yeah. But for those who are really struggling and really hurting and just don't see, you know, this happened to us last week. I learned that the moment, the difference between absolute pain and complete euphoria can be 1 second away. My daughter lost her dog last week. It somehow snuck out of the house. She didn't have tags on it because it wakes up the baby, so she's taking the dog tags off the dogs. And they put them on when they take them out for a walk, but don't have one around the house. Well, somehow it slipped out through an open door, whatever. They didn't see it leave. It escaped around 2:30, they think, when my daughter picked up my granddaughter from school. And Julia didn't know it was missing until 5 o'clock. Went to feed the dogs, couldn't find one of them, and looked all over the house, looked in the backyard, everywhere. Went, oh, no, she's gone. She calls us. We were already going over there to have a bit of dinner with the kids. And she calls and said, well, Holly's not here. I'm like, Holly's not here. Holly's a little beagle. And so, man, we got over there, and, yeah, we hit the neighborhood. We're outside calling for the dog. We're knocking on doors. We went out as late as we possibly could find no sign of this dog anywhere. Got up the next morning, and we did hear that a dog control truck had been parked in front of Julie's house at 3 o'clock. That's what we've been told. So we thought, great, they have her. They'll go get her in the morning. Well, they called in the morning and didn't pick up any dogs on that street. They didn't have her. So my daughter's devastated. I go over there. We're hunting. A husband came home early from a business deal. He was supposed to be gone overnight. He came back. They went out early in the morning. All I see is coyotes on the hillside, and help that.
That's not a good story.
You guys have been through that. It's just painful as heck to think that might be the way your dog ended. So I got over there helping pass out flyers. Julie and I are taping up on mailboxes. She's getting phone calls from people that, hey, and she's going, yes, it's me. And the people are just calling, say, I saw your poster up. You're still missing your dog. Yeah, we'll be looking for you. I don't need those kind of phone calls. And then, so we put up the last ones we could possibly put up anywhere we thought this dog might go, up to a mile and a half away from her house. And she was really, really sad, hadn't gotten a phone call. I'm feeling it for her. Man, they've lost their little dog. The little dog's part of it. I mean, Jacobson's our dog people. And I'm really hurt for it. And then she gets a phone call. She said, yes. Yeah, we're just pulling into her driveway after going, we can't do anything more other than just wait and see if somebody calls. And all of a sudden she goes, you have her? And she just exploded into tears. And I exploded into tears. And I went in and grabbed Sarah and Tyler and said, hey, we've got the dog, I think. And so we're all back out. And Julie and Tyler, the dog, this is one of two college kids saw this dog near this main road thinking, man, that's scary. So they went across the street to Holly. And Holly's skittish, so she ran away from them. They kind of walked behind her for over a mile, in another part of the housing development. Finally, she went onto a front porch where the kids could finally kind of corner her and grab hold of her, and they knocked on the door and said, is this your dog? And they said, no, it's not a dog. We don't know whose it is. So they took it home with them to Thousand Oaks. And so they came back the next day to look for signs in the neighborhood, and they found Julie's sign and called her. And I'm telling you what, the thing from absolute despair and forlorn and this is lost, that mourning into dancing was literally less than 20 seconds of absolute pain to sheer delight. And, you know, when we live in our circumstances, we don't know how close we are to something turning a corner, something having light in it, to something God makes known. And I know it's easy to say, and people say, I've been in this for despair for 2 years, and I get that, and I hate that kind of pain. One thing to look at, I think we've talked about, is if you're approaching God in the wrong way, that's going to make it more difficult. If it's he owes you and I'm angry, it's going to make it more difficult to see. But we honestly don't know when something happens that changes that depth of pain into an absolute joyful event. If it was just someone had the dog had been saved. They picked it up at 3 o'clock. I told Julie, we had tags on that dog. She'd have found the dog before she knew it was lost. The kids would have brought it over. And yet she didn't, even though the dog was safe, she doesn't know that. So she's living with all the trauma of eaten by a coyote, frozen under a bush somewhere, something. But fortunately, we didn't think it was run over by a car because we'd walked all the streets, so we didn't think that had necessarily happened. We checked all the clinics. But the difference between excruciating pain and absolute joy may be a phone call away, maybe just a circumstance away from something changing in our lives. And
I mean, just think of the fact that, you know, does God love me? Well, is the dog safe? You didn't know that.
Nope, we didn't.
But the dog was.
Right.
So all the pain, if you knew that. I mean,
if
you knew that.
Yeah.
So it's like in terms of just a starting point with God, I'm pretty sure he has demonstrated once and for all, pretty concretely, in his death on the cross for us, if nothing else.
Yeah.
He has placed a measure of love on us that is pinned to the wall. If we started there, even in the difficulty of our circumstance.
Even if in your case, you guys never got Chipper back. Chipper disappeared on you guys. Like, people ask about Chipper still. They go back with the old podcast.
He was processed coyote, you know? I mean...
That's what you're assuming.
Yeah.
Most likely that's what happened, but you don't know. And even, but the fact is you didn't get her back.
Ever.
And God's in that too. Yeah. I mean, your family cried, I would assume, some of your kids.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this left a mark on Jonathan.
Yeah.
Jonathan has not made as close of friends with Turbo as he did
with Chipper.
With Chipper.
Because you're not going to let that place get hurt again.
Yeah. And you just go like, dang, I, you know, son, I love you. Life, this is part of life. This is part of this experience.
God's in the pain, too. It's not...
He hasn't left you.
It's not only in the celebration stories. I mean, maybe that's been kind of a theme of this thing. From, you know, you might be winning championships and throwing your family in the trash. You might be doing that. You might be in the middle of a despairing thing because God's doing stuff you don't know about, and joy's going to come in the morning. Or maybe in the morning, God's comfort gets known to you in ways you don't know. That when we inhabit the reality of life, looking for what God is doing today, rather than what I'm demanding that he do to make me happy, then this journey becomes a bit freer of a walk, I would think.
Well, yeah.
Just for me.
I know for me, and I don't know how this works for everyone else, but I know for me, just the knowledge that I'm not doing this by myself, I got to tell you, mitigates against the despair and the pain to a profound degree. It's not, I don't believe we get a pain-free life at all.
Yep.
I mean, I'll guarantee you will have
this is
trouble.
Life, my gosh, yes.
Excuse me.
This is life.
I'm pretty sure that's one of those positive truths. No, you'll see this one fulfilled. In this life, you will have trouble. That's just, that's a promise, okay?
Yeah.
And that one will make good. But the reality is the reason for good cheer is he's overcome and I'm not alone. I'm not abandoned in my even seeming abandonment. And when you lock that down, it just looks and feels different. It's not utterly dark all the time. It might be really dark, but it's not utterly dark. And I just find I have anchored my hope in the fact that, you know what, I'm not alone. God had not abandoned me in this moment, as bad as it might feel, as much of it may be my fault. I made a complete mess of this, okay? He didn't abandon me. He's still here. We can find our way back. Do I need help? Absolutely. I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
Yeah.
But when that's anchored down, it just feels different. I've lived life when that hasn't been anchored down, and it felt a lot worse. I think to finally be rooted and grounded in the love of God. I mean, Paul says, you know, I pray that a spirit of wisdom and revelation would be upon you, that the eyes of your heart would be opened, and that you would know this. I don't know how to make that happen, but I have prayed forever growing up. When I saw that thing, I tractor beamed on it and said, God, and that looks important. I want that one. I need that one anchored in me. And you know what? I think that's something that God, it's like God anchors in. And when he does, gosh, it really does have a wonderful game over, you win effect. Because I do feel like, gosh, as bad as whatever this is, he's with me.
And isn't the anger maybe the fear that he's really not there? There really isn't a God. Or if there is, he's not going to be there for me.
It's the fear, yeah.
Yeah. And when you get past that somewhere, and I think it's a marvelous moment to find out that God really does care about you and cares about the struggle you're in and will have a way. If the dog comes home or the cat doesn't, he has a way to walk you through what's going on in your life. And he'll make something good even out of the most painful stuff we go through.
Well, I know that the intimacy that we have sometimes felt in the midst of the worst predicaments, of just feeling God's care and shared pain, you know, I think for some theologians, that's just a weird one. They don't know how to attach the emotions of shared pain where God's omnipotent. He could do anything. But right now, he's hurting with me because of an outcome that causes us pain. I hadn't changed it. He didn't change the outcome. But I didn't feel alone. And I got, you know, it's like, I don't know how to make that real for somebody. You know, you just need to have one of those experiences. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, because it's not a matter of, I think the reason theologians get confused is because they're trying to answer it in a principle or two or three.
Yeah.
Instead of answering it inside a relationship, which is, I can't define it, but I am grateful that in my darkest moments, I'm not alone, even if I feel like I am.
Uh-huh.
And there's more he's doing to make himself known in me as the circumstance unfolds. And I agree. I think that that lightens whatever load we've got. If we're in our stuff alone, then that's utterly dark.
Yeah, and I think just the pain of that feeling of abandonment is, I think that overwhelms a lot of people. And that's what sort of makes the perspective just all go dark.
Yeah, even more than the circumstance.
Yes.
Yeah, I find that true all the time. It's not the circumstance by itself.
I can deal with
manage that. But if God left me alone here, or God didn't fix the only thing I think a loving God could do in this situation, then the battle's, I don't know, then it's lost. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, and I think the difference that it's transacted in my own heart is, I think, because somehow God, I mean, I've shared this before. I took my complaint to him at one point, and I just said, you know, this whole verse, God, that you'll never leave me nor forsake me? I said, I think that's just absolute a crock. I don't believe that, because that's not what I felt. And I had my raw, honest-to-God moment saying, you know what, I can't read that without smirking and going, well, that's not true. And I just kind of went,
how'd that work for you?
Wait, no, it didn't work, I'll say, because I was left with that whole sense of, see, you know, you did. And so my life, I think, was characterized by that, you know, sort of rut of emotion. And God graciously kind of said, well, let's actually take a look at that. And you can't prescribe this, but for me, he basically took me back through those moments. I didn't have some guided meditation where it's like, well, let's heal those memories. Okay, I didn't have that. But I did have God replay those tapes where I had felt abandoned, and all of a sudden I saw him there. And I'm like, well, no, you're photoshopping this because you were not there. And it's like, no, he was. But I didn't, that's not how it registered in my pain. My pain blanked out my capacity to assume he was there. And yet, when he showed me he was there, at the end of that, I don't know how it transacted, but I do know I felt different. I had a different set of imprints because I wasn't dealing with that argument of, no, you abandoned me.
Yeah.
I felt like you were with me. Gosh, I interpreted this as if you weren't. And that's really painful because then it's not so much even about what I'm dealing with. It's the fact that he and me are messed up.
That's why I love that little refrain in 2 Timothy where it talks about when we are faithless, he remains faithful because he can be no other than himself.
Yeah.
That the heart of God, when we think we are abandoned, we think God hasn't been there, he's always been there. Maybe not doing what we think he should do, but ultimately doing what's best for God's unfolding purpose on the planet. And in that, he's being faithful to us in ways that sometimes defies our understanding.
Yeah, see, I think that weed root of religion that finds its way into our soul, it goes so deep that the hard thing for us is we look at God as though, well, if I had done this, I would have forsaken me. And then it's true. You know, someone's a real jerk to me. See ya. I don't have a whole lot of emotional, gee, I'm just going to stick in with it. It's like someone keeps doing that, and that is like, hey, no, I'm out of here. I think, unfortunately, that's where we don't have a revelation past that. And so we sort of associate that at a deep core with God. And we sort of feel like, you know what? Until he addresses it down there, I have that fear that if I am faithless, he's going to cut me off. And we don't know that he remains faithful.
Yeah, and if we can only trust God when we get everything right, then ultimately we're only trusting our performance. And that's never going to be good enough.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.